Welcome to today's edition of In Focus. Grant Demme here, filling in for Bob Perot this morning. And today we are back with our weekly chat with the Health Unit. We are joined by Dr. Lena Lee, the Medical Officer of Health of the Leeds, Granville, Lanark and District Health Unit, as well as Lucia Taggart, the Vaccine Manager of that same Health Unit. How's it going today, guys?
Good. How are you today, Grant?
Good. Just getting by, and I realize this is our first time chatting. We haven't crossed paths yet, so it's nice to finally get a conversation in with you.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. So we'll just dive right into it. Of course, you know, COVID obviously is still a very pertinent issue, but so too is the respiratory season that we're having with RSV and the flu and all of that as well. So sort of where do we sort of sit when it comes to COVID as well as the respiratory season?
Yeah, so I think the takeaway I'm hoping the listeners will get from this little bit of it is that we're really not quite sure. If we look at the numbers that we do post publicly every week, every Tuesday, on our Health Unit website, we can see that for COVID-19, we do have steady transmission numbers based on testing that's been done in our region over the past 2 weeks. The caveat here with COVID-19 and other respiratory viruses is that, I don't know about you, but for me, during the holidays, I didn't really want to go anywhere and do anything sort of too unexpected. And so it's possible that people wouldn't have gotten tested over the holidays, even though they were ill. And so our numbers may be off a little bit compared to our usual. And what we'll need to do is wait another probably week or two to see whether we've had more transmission in our region that's sort of uncaptured in the numbers. So that's for the COVID-19 testing numbers. For the respiratory season in general, what we did see is that the number of people going to ER did drop off over the holidays. Again, it's not clear whether that's related to less transmission and less severity, leading people to not go to the ER so much, or because they were busy with other holiday things. And so we'll see where the trends go over the next 2 weeks or so. But what we did also see is that at the assessment centers, we did have continued people going to the assessment centers, testing positive for non-COVID-19 illnesses, less so with flu now compared to in previous week's trends, but certainly still lots of flu, still lots of rhinovirus, RSV, metapneumovirus, et cetera. And our percent positivity for those tests remains about the same as what we've seen in the past. So we definitely still have respiratory viruses transmitting in our region. And we know in previous years, the trend tends to be that people mix and mingle with groups that they wouldn't usually mix and mingle with during the holidays, and that leads to transmission that rises in the post-holiday period. We saw that during COVID-19, but that's a trend that holds steady sort of even before COVID-19. And so I'm on the lookout, and I would ask everyone to be on the lookout for things like that in the next 2 weeks as well.
And you know, to sort of backtrack a little bit, you mentioned we're in a bit of a holding pattern when it comes to figuring out where COVID sits after the holidays. What should we do in the meantime? What should we look out for? What are some things we should consider after having those holiday gatherings?
Yeah, so I think the big thing to talk about is definitely monitoring for symptoms. So being aware of what constitutes as a symptom for you, for parents with young kids, what constitutes symptoms for them, and doing a bit of a check-in every day, especially in the mornings before you plan the rest of your day, you know, whether you go to work, whether the kids go to school, et cetera. So a respiratory illness oftentimes will be a cough, a runny nose, fevers, generally feeling unwell. For people who are more elderly, they may not mount a fever, but they might be more confused, They might feel weak and have body aches. All of these things would be compatible with a respiratory illness. And if you do have those symptoms, the best message there is to please stay at home, to not go to work or school or any gatherings, not go to the grocery store. Just delay until about 24 hours after your symptoms have stopped. And so that, I think, is the big piece of information that I want to talk about here. The other things that are important, of course, is continuing to wear masks in public spaces, both because it may protect yourself and also critically because if you're ill, but, you know, you're infectious, but you may not know it, then it helps prevent you from transmitting these viruses to other people, so COVID-19, flu, as well as other respiratory viruses. And then the last piece that I'll mention, of course, is hand washing. So washing your hands frequently, using hand sanitizer, bringing hand sanitizer with you. These are all important things to consider in this sort of post-holiday period where we're on the lookout for whether we've had more transmission or growth of respiratory illness in our region.
And here we are in 2023, and we're still talking about new COVID variants, and they just seem to be coming out fast and furious. I just read about this one this morning. So what can you tell us about what we know about these new strains that are out there? I believe one of them is called XBB 1.5, which doesn't really roll off the tongue very well, but it's still out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, the reality of COVID-19 virus in particular is that it does mutate, and I should say, actually, as a caveat, all of these respiratory viruses mutate. This is why, for example, flu vaccines are new every year, because it's a new variant of flu every year. It's also why you can get, for example, RSV strain or rhinovirus strain 1 year, and then several years later you may get infected with the exact same virus again, is because that virus has mutated. For COVID-19, it's very similar. The names, I agree, are named by scientists. They're very technical names. Really, things to keep in mind is, certainly I know with transmission of COVID-19, any time that there's a lot of transmission, certainly, for example, what we're seeing in China right now, we're going to get the risk of new variants because every new infection is a new opportunity for the virus to mutate. And as we get new variants, the things to look out for are, one, how infectious. So is it more infectious than what's currently circulating in our region right now? And then two, how severe? So is it more or less likely to cause severe illness? And three, how much does it evade immunity from vaccination or previous infection? So these are three factors that we're looking at for all of these new variants, including XBB.1.5, which is what's circulating heavily in China right now. So the thing about these new variants is that oftentimes we don't know these three, you know, what I was just talking about, these three features. We don't know what they look like until they've been circulating for a little bit, and we can do that research on them. So that information is still getting established for this new variant that's circulating in China. The other thing I should mention about that variant is that it is found widely in other parts of the world. So certainly, for example, it was first identified in the U.S. Or perhaps in India or other parts of the world. It's the one that's circulating in China. It is circulating in Ontario. We have that variant in Ontario identified. And the surveillance system that we have in the province does look at how quickly it's transmitting. Right now, it's not the dominant strain. We don't know yet whether it will become the dominant strain. and then as well what will happen for, you know, its severity and its immune evasiveness. These are all things that we'll get more information about over the next couple of weeks probably.
Well, Dr. Lee, I'd like to thank you for your time. And hopefully with these new strains coming out, we won't see the mass vaccination clinics that were required when COVID-19 was out and the new vaccines came. And hopefully they can switch to the clinics that are there now that have been relocated of sorts. So I'd like to talk to Lucia Taggart if she is still on the line here.
Yes, I am. Hi there, Grant.
Hi. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well, and I hope I can do as good a job as my predecessor, Jenny Vandermeer, who's enjoying a well-deserved break. So, Jenny, shout out to you.
Absolutely. So, what is happening with the vaccination clinics? What's going on? A little bit of a change up there.
Yes, and I think I do believe Jenny alluded to this in her previous discussions with you or with Tracy Lute, was that given the trend of we were seeing lower numbers of people wanting to come to the health unit to get their COVID vaccine, we actually were able to transition into having our COVID clinics in our offices, married with the fact that our wonderful community partners were wanting to get their spaces back so that they could, you know, host events and sporting events and all that. So trying to move into the, you know, living alongside COVID-19. So we have clinics set up, and actually our first one was in Elmont today, at all our regular offices. So Brockville, Smiths Falls, Kempville, Elmont, and Gananoque. They're on a weekly schedule, and we hope to keep them that way. We will be offering some weekend clinics on Saturdays where we need to, where the demand is high. So definitely keeping an eye on numbers and bookings for that as well. But to book into the clinics, we're trying to keep it as simple as possible for our community members. It's the usual process. They can book themselves in through the Pomelo system, or they can call our call center, and happy to book them into a clinic.
And what about flu vaccines as well? I understand, of course, you can't get those at a COVID-19 clinic. How do people go about getting their flu vaccine, which is obviously important every year, but maybe more so now than ever?
For sure. A lot of the pharmacies were already set up to and very capable of administering the flu vaccine, so definitely folks can contact their local pharmacy. Healthcare providers have also been ordering a flu vaccine from us, so that's another option. If someone doesn't have a healthcare provider, or if they have pharmacists aren't able to immunize anyone under two, they also can call our either our call center or our regular 1-800 line, and they can be booked into one of our regular clinics. So we do have we are able to offer flu vaccine to those who don't have a healthcare provider, can't for some reason get it at the pharmacy.
And just to sort of preach a little about how easy it is to get a flu vaccine. I mean, right before the holidays, I booked an appointment with Shoppers, went in the next day, and I was in and out in 15 minutes, and 13 of those minutes was having to wait to see if I'd get a reaction of the vaccine.
Yeah.
So it really is as easy as just making a phone call or just going online.
Yes. The pharmacy program has really stepped up to provide that service. And even with COVID vaccines, a lot of them are still able to provide that for clients. So definitely giving them a call and seeing what is available there. And it may be more convenient. I mean, our clinics run during regular office hours, so, 8:30 to 4:30. But, you know, the pharmacies are open later than that. They're open on weekends. So for some reason, if one of our clinics doesn't suit people's schedule, they could still definitely go to the pharmacy to get their COVID-19 vaccine.
And what about school immunization as well? What's going on with the schools and getting the children vaccinated?
Oh, the schools. Glad you brought that up. So, yes, we are working diligently with the schools and the school boards to set up in-school clinics. We're calling them catch-up clinics. Really, we have kids who might have gotten one dose and then the world changed. of their regular school vaccine. So we do have a large cohort, basically everyone from grade 9 to 12, who we know for sure are the majority are behind in their immunization schedule. So we are booking clinics for that. Most of those will happen in February. We have some dates with the schools, for the high schools, for the older kids. And then after we're done with them, we will start looking at the grade 7 and 8. Really important thing, Grant, is that, yes, we have dates set up with the schools. Yes, there's information on our website. Parents and families really have to contact their school for those dates because they may change because of weather or staffing, and it was just we just felt it was easier if the school was the communication piece with the families because they know how to reach their families the best. So if parents have any questions about the actual date, they can contact the school. We are sending out hard copy consent forms for the students to take home. Board policy, the health unit does need signed parental consent for to immunize the kids in school. If for some reason your child forgot to bring home their consent form, you can also print one off of our website. So, and the school has all that information and will be sharing it with families.
Yes, I was absolutely the child at school who would forget to bring anything home. So I'm glad you mentioned that part because I'm sure there are a lot of parents who are laughing and saying, yes, my child would absolutely forget that consent form. So just one more question for you. When it comes to booking or planning these school immunization events, are there any extra challenges that come with that? Because I bet you that there's a lot of moving parts with these.
There are, and that's why we chose to have the school communicate with the family, and that way we're not having to update our website and communication. So the moving parts, of course, are schools are trying to get back to their regular business, so there might be sporting events or clubs, or, you know, then there's a thing called March break, and, you know, so all these different moving parts. So we are trying to staff up the clinics so that the staff that were going out doing the community clinics, we are sending those same staff and in good numbers to do these school clinics so that we can, again, get as many kids done as we can to make sure that they're protected with their regular immunizations.
Excellent. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add or Dr. Lee before we let you go?
I think we've covered it all, Lucia.
Yes, no, that's great. If anybody has any questions about, again, the school program, it's on our website or contact your school. And, great talking to you today, Grant.
Yes, well, thank you for joining me. I hope I did Bob well. So thank you for humoring me and joining us today. And we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. There goes the health unit, Dr. Lena Lee, and Lucia Taggart, the vaccine manager for the Leeds Lanark-Granville District Health Unit. That does it for this In Focus for today. Thank you for joining me, Grant Demme, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.